when something traumatic happens, you can't just get over it.
Hi there. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Hecate, and this is Finding Okay, a healing podcast for survivors of sexual assault and any and all abuse. Today, I'm joined by Hollis Brown. Hollis is a sports marketer, podcast host, mentor, public speaker, model, youth educator, nonprofit founder, and Miss Wisconsin USA 2022. Hollis will compete for the coveted title of Miss USA during the national broadcast in early October, and if she wins, will advance to the internationally televised Miss Universe competition. Hollis's platform as Miss Wisconsin USA is focused on survivor advocacy, and she's a part of End Violence Against Women International's Start by Believing global campaign. Today, she's sharing her story and talking about the work she's doing in the world. And now it's time for trigger and content warnings for this episode include the following: sexual assault, rape, trauma, and PTSD. Please check in with yourself and make sure you're all right to continue.
Are you okay?
You know, we're getting there. I feel like, especially recently, I've adopted the mindset of taking it day by day, moment by moment. So in this moment, yes, I am okay.
And what is a compliment that you've received that you've never forgotten?
That I have good energy. Which I think sometimes can be a good thing, but then also a bad thing, because I really enjoy making other people feel happy, feel motivated, feel positive. But then I think on the downside, if people aren't feeling their best, they can kind of gravitate to you and kind of drain you sometimes. But overall, I really enjoy spreading positivity. So I'm glad that people find my energy something so rejuvenating.
Yeah. Oh, I feel you. Every so often you get those energy vampires. So you have to guard your energy neck.
Yep. And even the introvert in me gets very overwhelmed sometimes. But for the most part, we're pretty good.
I'm an introvert as well. So I feel you. And what is your favorite color or color combination, and what do you associate with it?
My favorite color is pink. Growing up, it used to fluctuate maybe every year or every few months it would change. But I think pink has stayed very consistent over these last few years. And I think for me, pink just reminds me of one, a very girly color, which I think represents me, but then also just bubbly and full of life. So pink is definitely my favorite color.
Is it like all pink, or do you have a specific pink that's like your ultimate favorite?
You know, I'm going to have to think about that some more. Right now it's all pink, but I think the shades of pink differ based on my moods. So sometimes it is a very vibrant pink, but maybe some days where I'm not feeling as best, it could be a warmer, like a rose pink. So really, maybe that's where my changes have differed. So rather than changing colors every month, now I just change every shades of pink.
There you go. I changed the little moon lamp to pink for you.
Oh, I love that. It's the details.
And what five things best represent you as a person?
Oh, I'm definitely going to say family. Are they physical things?
They can be intangible. We're very open-ended and open-minded here. So go with your
gut. Technically family is our physical beings. So we'll put that in there. Family and friends, I'm going to count that as one and two. I attended a wedding this weekend, and I don't actually have time to visit home pretty often, just because I get so busy with my pageant or work or just life in general. But going home really kind of refilled my cup. And I didn't realize how much I missed home or being around like my family and friends and those genuine connections. So definitely family and friends. The next one would be my dog, Kingsley. He very much keeps me centered, full of cuddles, full of walks. I love my little fur ball to death. So those will be my top three. And then the other things, this may change, but right now I'm going to say avocado toast. I had it for the first time a month ago, and I lied to you not, I've probably eaten it every morning ever since. So I am very obsessed with avocado toast. And then the next thing would be chapstick. That is my holy grail. So I know my top five was probably a little all over the place, but as you can see, family, friends, food, chapstick, and my dog. Yep.
What kind of dog do you have?
I have a Morkie. And he, I want to say, will be 4 in November. So yes, he is the best. His full name is Kingsley Christian Brown.
Aw.
Yes, he is my best friend. I get it now. I get why people are obsessed with their dogs.
Yeah. I think mine's turning 5, I think, in a few days. Well, it's like her adoption birthday. So we just celebrate like the join the family day. But yeah.
Oh, isn't it like your gotcha day?
Gotcha day. I like that. I've never heard that. That's so cute. Thank you. I like that. Gotcha day. Cute. Yeah. No, she's my fuzzy baby. Yeah.
I love that.
And I would love to hear 3 essentials to your self-care.
So one essential is my dog. He's going to come up a lot, but he is a very emotional support dog. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I am feeling down or I'm on a brink of tears, which I am a crier, whether I'm happy, sad, emotional, hungry, everything, I can probably cry. And so he's always around to give me some love. So he's definitely a key part of my self-care. Another one is face masks and being able to just kind of like relax, put on some music, put on a face mask, and just decompress. It makes me feel like I'm going to a modified spa that I can do myself. And then another part of my self-care has become TV and just unplugging. I think, like I mentioned earlier, between the pageant and work and just everything that I have going on, sometimes life can be very go, 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 go for me and like very active thinking. And so I've realized that incorporating TV or just moments where I can just kind of be have been very therapeutic for me. Before, when you always see the sayings on Instagram where they're like, don't watch TV, read a book or do all these inspirational things. But there has to be a balance. And I found that TV kind of does that for me, where it's like, okay, just relax for an hour, 30 minutes, 2 hours, whatever you need, but just like enjoy something that you enjoy watching.
Yeah. It's a totally different, like, switch off, like unplug kind of thing, as opposed to reading a book, which is far more like active engagement. And that's great. Like, absolutely. Like, everyone should read, but it is like a totally different state of being. And every so often, if a lot of us are in high stress right now for one reason or another. But a lot of people I talk to, and myself included, like binge watching Netflix or something like that just comes up a lot, where it's very much like a coping skill that's getting us through, just sort of like, I need to be cozy and I need to just unplug and just switch off.
Yeah, 100%. Disney Plus has become my best friend, where they have all my childhood shows and movies. I watched High School Musical the other day, and in that moment, it made everything better.
Yeah.
So my story starts, I've stopped keeping track, but I want to say maybe early 2015. Math is not my strongest skill. So it's 2022 now. You can do the math on how long ago that was. But I was a sophomore at school and college, and it was a very troubling time for me. So during that time, I want to say maybe December is when I did my first pageant ever. So a very, very exciting experience for me, opportunity. Clearly, it kind of lingered because I've been doing pageants ever since. But in the hindsight of that, everything that was going on, my personal life was just very challenging. So I was going through a lot of difficult times with my friends where there was just kind of like a lack of communication, for better words. And now we're fine. We're best of friends. But I think in that moment, it was just like college drama and not being friends anymore. And I took it very, very hard, very, very heavy, because as I mentioned in my top five earlier, friends and family are very important to me, especially when you find that connection. Because let's be honest, everybody's not going to like you. But when you find that core group of people that are like your people, you like to hold on to them. And so going through a loss of a friendship was just very tough for me. And so I think I tried to find the filler in other spaces. And so tapping into seeing where else I can find friends or where else I can get kind of that camaraderie. And looking back, I probably looked in the wrong spaces. And so I ended up meeting this basketball player that was at my university. And we hung out a couple of times. It wasn't the greatest connection, but again, it gave me something to do. It gave me somebody to talk to. And I think one night he invited me over where a few of the other basketball players were just kind of like hanging out. And from that experience, I went over there. It started off relatively fun, or at least what seemed to be fun. And then we went into his room, had a moment where we were just kind of talking. And then things slowly escalated, where we started kissing. And then from there, I realized that I did not want to be there anymore. And that was actually not what I wanted. And so I said that I'm going to leave now. I think it's time for me to go home. And he ended up pushing me back to the bed and said that I wasn't going anywhere. And then I think we can kind of fill in the blanks from what happened from there. And I just kind of froze because in that moment, I am 5'10". And he had to be a solid 6'7", 6'8" basketball player. And so I was terrified in that moment. I didn't know what could happen. I just kind of froze, which looking back, I understand why I had that reaction. But in a moment, you always hear people talk about fight or flight. People don't talk about the freeze aspect. And so throughout these years, I've really tried to take a moment to educate myself on the reactions that sexual assault survivors have, or just how they respond to things. And why did I freeze? Because I always thought I'd be one of those people where it's like, well, if it happened to me, I'd do this. Or if it happened to me, I'd do this. But really, you don't know what you would do in that moment. And it's very hard looking back or being in that moment and you're just kind of reacting and you don't probably have time to think or adjust. Some people do. I'm not going to say everybody doesn't, but it's just very hard knowing how you would handle that situation if you have never been in that situation. And so from there, back to my story time, from there, I did end up leaving. And I did end up, I think, either taking like a Lyft or Uber home, or somehow I got home. But I think in a moment, I just kind of like pushed it in the back of my head, which is something that I tend to do, is if it's bad or if I don't like it, I just push it in the back of my head and we keep it moving. And then the next day, as I was going to class, I was on my way to accounting class that morning. And I remember it vividly. And I think in this moment is how I realized that something was not right. And I actually could not push this to the back of my head. But while I was sitting in class and the professor, he's going over like debts and credits and all of that stuff that you talk about in accounting. And I just start crying and I could not stop crying for the life of me. And I'm sitting in the back of the class and I feel so bad because the professor, he's looking at me crying because it's not like little tears. I'm like, quietly Kim Kardashian ugly crying in the back of the class. And I didn't want to get up to go to the bathroom or to leave because then I didn't want to draw attention to myself because no one noticed that I was crying. Yeah. And then, so I just kind of like sat there and cried for 45, 50 minutes of the whole class. And then I just went home I didn't go to any of the other classes that I had that day. And I got on the bus, but I cried the whole bus ride home. I cried, I think, probably the rest of that day. I don't remember what the rest of that day looked like specifically, but I do remember crying in the class and crying the whole bus ride home. And then later that week, slowly just trying to digest what happened, I told one of my friends. And at the time, she was like, well, what? Actually, I forget the questions that she had at the moment, but they were some doubting questions of like, well, are you sure that happened? Like, you seem pretty fine. If he apologized, like, I think it's good. Yep, because he did end up sending me a text message that said, I'm sorry for making you do anything that you didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that was another moment where I was like, okay, I think clearly something is off here. Like, I'm crying mentally. My body is telling me that I'm not okay. The text message is telling me that obviously things are not okay. And I think oftentimes people don't talk about the aspect for sexual assault survivors for the denial that they face, because I faced a lot of denial in those long times. I was just like, I don't know why I'm crying, but I'm always crying. I don't know why he's apologizing, but clearly he feels bad for something. And it didn't take until me talking to another friend that was a male, talking through what happened. And he was like, whoa, are you serious? Did that happen? That is not okay. And it didn't take for me talking through with him to realize that, oh my goodness, I had been raped in that moment. And I am still to this day very appreciative for that conversation, very appreciative of him reassuring me that it was going to be okay, and that he heard me, and that he understood where I was coming from, and that he was going to be there for me in that moment for whatever I needed. And sometimes that is all you need, is someone to be like, I'm sorry that happened to you. How can I best help you in this moment? Even if you don't know, because I was still processing that that had happened. So I didn't know what I needed in that moment. So it was just a very long rest of the semester for me to get through. I ended up almost flunking out of all of my classes because I stopped going to class. I stopped being motivated to do anything. And then another one of my friends, once I told her what happened, and how I wasn't going to class, she ended up coming to classes with me. And she would just sit there with me, which looking back at the time, I don't think I realized like how amazing that is to just go sit in random classes that you do not have to be in to support your friend and make sure that they're going to class mm-hmm. and making sure that they do the work. But still to this day, she is one of my best friends. But I just really appreciate the support system that I had and being able to talk through it. But back to the classes, I think I got a 1.8 or something. It was actually really bad. And it came to the point where I wasn't at the point where I wanted to open up to my parents about it. And so they just thought I wasn't serious about school. And they thought I was just out partying, just doing whatever, I guess, stereotypical college students do. They didn't know that I was going through this whole traumatic experience that I was trying to fight through. So that was something all in itself.
That must have been rough to navigate with your parents.
Yes, it was a lot, because talking to my mom, they very much value school and education. And so, and I'm very fortunate that they were actually paying for my education while I was in college. And so from their hindsight, it's like, well, if you're not taking this serious, why are we spending all this money for you to go to these classes and you're not even going? Right. And then so it came to the discussion of like, well, if you're not serious, then we're not going to pay for your school. Or it's like, well, you have one more semester to pull this together, because what are you doing? We're paying for your housing, we're paying for your school, and you're literally just up there doing what? Yep. And I did not have it in my heart to tell them what was really going on.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a lot.
What did you do?
Honestly, I don't remember. I think I just, in a moment, agreed and was just like, yeah, it was just partying. sorry, I'm not taking it serious. I'll do better next semester and I'll show you that I am dedicated. Because again, I like to have these experiences, but then push them into the back of my mind. And I'm like, you know what? It happened. Push it back. You're fine. Move forward. Get over it. But with some, when something traumatic happens, you can't just get over it. You have to acknowledge that it happened. You have to deal with it. You have to talk through it in ways that work for you. And that's a process in itself, is finding what way works for you. Because I think now in 2021, 2022, I'm just now really getting a hang of what works for me. And so that truthfully tells you how long that process takes on that journey to healing. And so it was a long time. It was a long time. And so that was probably the end of my sophomore year. And then fast forward, going to the summer, going into my senior year. So I want to say the summer of 2017. So almost 2 years later, I actually got an internship in California. It was the most amazing internship. And I was able to go out by myself and just live life, for lack of a better word, live life. And so one night while I was just like in my Airbnb watching TV, the hot show at the time was 13 Reasons. And so I was like, oh, I'm binge watching 13 Reasons. This is my downtime. But no one told me that there was a scene in the show where the girl gets raped. And it is a very graphic scene. It is a very graphic scene.
I've never seen it. I got the warning and I was like, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so sorry that took you by surprise. I'm
glad that you got the warning. I know. I did not get the warning that was in there. And sometimes when people hint at rape, they don't show it or they just imply it.
Yeah.
But no, 13 Reasons, they show it. They show the whole interaction. And that was the biggest panic attack I think I've ever had in my life, watching that. And it was so hard. It came to the point where I was just like crying and I felt like I couldn't breathe. It was so heavy. It was such a heavy moment. And of course, I'm in California. So for those that don't know, I'm East Coast born and raised in Georgia. And so here I am on the other side of the nation alone, having this panic attack. I was just like, oh my goodness. And that was another moment where I was just like, okay, you need to tell your mom. You need to have this conversation with your mom. Because, you know, you have those moments in life where you're like, I just need a hug from my mom. I just need to talk to her. I don't want to talk to anybody else. I don't want a hug from anybody else. I want nothing else but my mom. Yeah. And so I made a vow that when I came home from the summer, I was going to tell her. And oh, goodness gracious, I was nervous. Because, you know, it's your parent. At least for me, I thought I was going to go my whole life without them knowing or without it ever coming up. And again, I was just going to sweep it under the rug and just keep it pushing.
Wow.
But that scene just really brought something to me that I needed to let it out, because it felt like I just was carrying this really big burden and this really big secret. Sidebar here, but again, for those who don't know me, I am the worst liar. I am the worst secret keeper.
Oh dear.
It just feels, I just feel so overwhelmed. And I'm just like, I have to tell someone. So either I'm going to tell someone or I'm going to forget. So with other people's secrets, normally I forget because that's not my place to tell. But with my own secrets, they do not stay secrets long. I'm the person where if it's a birthday or Christmas, I'm like, do you want to know what I got you? I can tell you. It's okay. I can let you know and you can act surprised. I am that person. And so for this, it just felt like I had this really big secret that I was just holding on and hovering on to. And it was just weighing me down. And so fast forward, I came home from the summer, and I don't even know how it came up in conversation. Knowing me, I also have word vomit, so I'm pretty sure I probably just blurted it out, which is probably not the best way to tell someone that you've been sexually assaulted, but it was the only way that I can get it out to her.
I don't really know the gentle
way to say that. You just gotta get it out. Like, this happened. I think I was sitting in my room and I came out and I was like, I have something to tell you, and just word vomited it out. And that whole scenario or interaction also taught me a lot, because that one was very difficult. And I ended up having another panic attack, just because from a parental standpoint, you want to protect your child. That is all you want to do. You want to fight all of their battles. You want to fight all of the bad people that hurt them. You want to just make sure that they're okay and protect them. And so for me, I think the protection standpoint kind of took over what I actually needed in that moment. And what I needed in that moment was just a listening ear and a hug, and we can figure the rest out later, or we can deal with the rest later. But in that moment, us having a conversation, and I'll never forget it. And of course, this is not coming from a bad place from my mom at all. Like, I absolutely love my mom. And I always like to preface it with that, because you just never know how some people can interpret things. But again, it was coming from a place of love and protection, where my mom was like, okay, well, what's his name? And I did not share the name, but she kept asking, and she was like, no, but what is his name? Because we're going to the school and you're dealing with this. What is his name? And I did not share the name.
Yeah.
Because I did not want to open up that can of worms. Because as you see throughout my story so far, I'm dealing with a lot of internal emotions that I'm trying to like figure out right now. The last thing that I want to do is bring in the school, is bring in the athletic department, because he was an athlete. There's just so, bring in the police, bring in all of these elements. I was not ready for that. So I did not share the name. And then my mom goes, well, why are you protecting him? That deserves it. And that is the moment where the panic attack happened. Because of all things, this is the last person that I'm trying to protect. I'm not trying to protect him at all. I'm trying to protect myself, because these last few months, years have been hell. Because there were just random moments that I'd have a panic attack, whether it was I passed the apartment or passed the building where his team used to play, because it came to a point where I couldn't even go to the athletic side of campus. And we had a very big athletic side of campus, because I went to a D1 school. So athletes and athletics and sports were very big there. And so just knowing all of these things that I was going through, that was just a very difficult conversation to have with her. Now, of course, it's been a few years, and throughout this process and bringing them in on this journey, my family has a better understanding of kind of what I was going through in that moment. And we were also able to kind of talk through the grade situation. And she was like, wow, you were going through all of this when I just thought you were skipping class to go to party or like sleep in. And it's like, no, I just did not have the motivation to do anything. So it was a lot. During my college experience, there were happy times, but a lot of times were pretty down based on this experience. And it was a lot. It was a lot.
If I'm allowed to ask, how did you move through that with your mother? Were you able to kind of express what you needed or explain like why? Was she able to understand why what she was saying was so upsetting? Or kind of understand things from your point of view?
So I think what helped is she was very transparent that an experience like that had not happened to her. So she wasn't sure how to help me in that moment or what I would need. And so what she was able to do is she had a friend that actually had experienced rape and sexual assault. And so she connected me with her. Mm-hmm. And so I think that helped kind of create a middle person and create a more calming space to kind of talk through what I needed, but also hear how someone else dealt with that situation. And so I am very appreciative of my mom, because I think that was kind of the first step that I actually took to healing or getting help or just talking through it in any aspect outside of the dialogue that I had with friends. And so I think looking back, it was extremely therapeutic to just get a better idea of I'm not alone in this situation. Not only am I not alone in what happened to me, but I'm also not alone in the after effect and how I was dealing with it and how it was not just a short process of get over it, of how my feelings were valid, even though they were 2 years later. And so that was a very monumental moment for us of being able to kind of like understand where my mom was coming from, which is where the friend also helped, of just giving me a better insight to how my mom was dealing with it, but then also articulate how I was dealing with it. So that's kind of how we got through it. Just taking the extra step to better understand each other, because it did hurt me, but it also hurt her.
That was serious wisdom on your mother's part, like bringing in someone else. And wow, like that, I wish more people would do that. That's kind of genius. And I'm so glad that you were able to have that middle person and also have access to another survivor who understood your experience and was able to be that person for you. And I can't help but get like slightly emotional, because like it brings us for full circle, and that's what you're doing right now, is you're being that person for somebody else who's raw and who's listening to this right now. And you're the survivor sharing your story and saying all the things that they need to hear that maybe they don't have someone in their life to say to them. So.
Yeah. And it's been very helpful, because I think also, well, one thing that I try to preach now is really listening to the survivor and understanding what they need in that moment. Because looking back in college, I want to say maybe my senior year, where I was a little more open with close friends, obviously not broadcasting it out, but with close friends. And I think everyone wanted to help me get better or kind of like talk through it or deal with it, whatever that means. But some ways just weren't ways that I was ready to deal with it yet. So for example, at the school that I went to, of course, for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, they do a candlelight vigil where people come in, share their stories, just kind of like having that moment for survivors. And my friend thought I should go. I was not in the mental space to go to that yet. And although she was pushing and she wanted the best for me and thought it would be great for me to go, understanding that I had not personally dealt with it yet to the level that I'd want to go and hear other people's stories and how they were also traumatized on top of navigating my own traumatic experience. Yeah. So I think for me, and even another example of that actually that I just thought of is one of my classes. So I love to write. And one of my professors, we had, what class was it? I think it was interpersonal communication. And we had to talk about an experience and dissect how it affects you and how it affects the people around you. And this is another reason of how, well, not reason, but example of how I like to try to dissect myself. I tried to write a paper on my reaction to my sexual assault. That was the worst idea I've probably ever had. The worst idea I've ever had, because not only did I have to figure out how I reacted, but I also had to research it. And I had to read other survivor stories and just read so much and gather so much data. And even to this day, well, I haven't read the paper recently, but every now and then I'll go back and read it, because in one of the papers, so actually the way it was broken up, I think one paper was solely like research driven. Another paper was based on your personal experience or just like talking through how you reacted to whatever topic you were talking about and backing it up with the research. And then the third and final paper was putting everything together. So overall, it had to be a good like 6-7 paper. Like it was a college paper, if you think about college papers. And so in the second paper, your girl got real raw. She laid it out. I went through literally every emotion, every thought that I had, and had it on that paper. Very vulnerable moment, but it was also very therapeutic. It was very therapeutic to kind of get it all out. But also understanding that I was going to turn that into my professor probably, again, wasn't the best topic for me to write about. And so I can only imagine what was going through my professor's mind as she was reading it. I'm sure she was like, what the heck? We got to get this girl some help. And that is exactly what she did. When I came to class for her after reading the paper, once everybody left, she stopped me. She was like, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And at that moment, you know, I put it all out on a paper. So I was temporarily okay. I was like, that was my therapy. I was like, we good now. We done got it all on paper. We're living life. And so she was like, your paper that you wrote about, are you okay? And I was just like, you know, yeah, it happened. But I was like, I think we're okay right now. We're just kind of navigating it. And she was like, well, I think you should really go to the Women's Center where we have therapy and counseling, and they'll be able to like help you process it and help you through it. And I was like, oh, I don't really know about that. I don't know if I want to like talk to someone about it, because I had already gone and seen a therapist that we had on campus, and that experience did not go well. So I was like, I don't know if I want to revisit a therapy on this topic yet. I don't think I'm ready for that. But she was like, no, they specialize in sexual assault. And so I think it'll be better because they actually have like the specific tools to help you navigate this conversation. And then she was like, I'll even go with you. Yes. Nice. And so in that moment, I was like, okay, if you'll go with me, I'll go. And so I ended up going, and we went upstairs. Again, very early in my traumatic experience for me to be going to therapy. But we're talking through it. And then the therapist goes, and I think at that point, it had literally been a year, because she goes, so it's like the anniversary of your assault. And I immediately start crying. I immediately start crying because I was like, anniversaries are supposed to be happy. Why did you associate this with an anniversary? I was like, that's not how I want to remember. I don't want to have an anniversary of my sexual assault. Yeah. So I cried and I left.
Can I ask how you've related to that idea moving forward?
Yeah. To be honest, I have not gone back to therapy after that experience. I have been looking into it, but to be very transparent, life has just been so busy that I have not had a moment to find a therapist that I relate with, because that is a job. You can't just pick one and go and start opening up. Like, you have to, right. It's a whole process. You have to interview, yeah, talk to different people, find someone that matches your vibe. But then also have that period where like maybe they originally matched your vibe, but then 2-3 sessions in, you're like, oh, actually, this is not what I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And so I just, in my schedule, have not had the time to sit down and like vet out different therapists that I'd want to go to. But it is top of my to-do list. But I will also say that within the last years, I have found volunteering to actually be very therapeutic for me. And yeah, I think that has been kind of my therapy, or even just one-off situations, because as you see now with me sharing my story, I am very open about it. I don't broadcast it, but if you know, you know. And I can go into as much detail as you want or as little detail. It just kind of depends on a situation and the day that I'm having. Which today is a great day because I've given you a lot of detail without crying. So great day for a story time. But yeah, I will say volunteering kind of has been my safe space and being able to kind of share my journey and things that I've learned to hopefully make other people's experiences a lot smoother. I'm not going to say better because it is still a very traumatic experience, but hopefully making it smoother so that way you have a more clear road on your journey to healing and not as many panic attacks as I did. Or are you out here watching 13 Reasons and not mentally prepared? So that's where I have found my therapy in helping others.
How did you get into that advocacy work that you've been doing? And I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, I would say pageants.
Really?
So pageantry has really forced me to get out of my comfort zone. For pageants, for people that don't know, you have to have a platform. And usually the platform is a cause that you really care about or just kind of a change that you want to see in the world. And from the beginning, so I want to say I really started getting serious about pageantry maybe around 2018. And so it's been a very long journey of figuring out where exactly do I fit in this fight for sexual assault advocacy and helping others. And I think, again, now in 2022, I have finally figured it out in a way that fills my cup, but also fills others and hopefully makes them feel better. And so for me, it is educating the family and friends. So that way they know how to respond to someone that has disclosed they've been sexually assaulted. And as you see from my story, from my times with family and friends and my mom and just like all those interactions where I was just like, that wasn't the best. I understand where you were coming from, but we can make this better to where it actually helps the victim.
Yeah.
That is where I find the most joy.
There's so very much a need for that. And I'm so excited to hear that that's where your focus is.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And
yeah.
Thank you for the work that you do.
Oh, no. Thank you. It is literally my pleasure because I think so often people wait until after someone has disclosed that they've been sexually assaulted to figure out the next steps. But those initial reactions and those initial conversations are so crucial in someone's journey have to say the right things. And I know that's probably a lot of pressure to say the right things, which is why I'm so fortunate that I was able to kind of partner and work with an organization called In Violence Against Women. And they have a campaign called Start by Believing. And ultimately, it's like, if you don't know what to say, if you don't know what to do, if you don't know how to help, just say, I believe you. Just start by believing and you can figure the rest out later.
That's fantastic.
Just say, I believe you. Right. It's like, I believe you. How can I best help you in this moment? And then you can figure out all the resources later. But in that moment,
yeah,
it's okay to just support someone.
It really is like one of the most important places to start. Cause like, as you are disclosing to friends and family, there is so much pressure and fear of, are they going to believe me? And like, that is one of the number one like hurdles that you start to bump up against is, mm-hmm. like you said, with the friend that started asking you, you know, kind of like disbelieving or maybe even like victim blamey kind of questions, immediate walls go up. That immediately is what makes the situation unsafe for you emotionally. A lot of the time, like that can just throw up that wall where it's just sort of like, okay, you're no longer a safe person to talk to. Mm-hmm. Or like, or it does incredible damage to yourself and sets your own healing back. Yeah, that's so important.
Yeah, 100%. And people don't even realize that, again, I'm already going through all of these internal thoughts and these internal doubts. Like, I think for me, it took maybe a week for it to really soak in me realize that I had been raped. Because I had already been going back and forth in my mind of like, no, it didn't happen. Like you're reaching, you're overreacting. But then the other side was like, no, I'm pretty sure that you were raped. But then the other side was like, no, but you did kiss him, but you changed your mind. And it's just like, you have all of these thoughts in your head already. And so to be able to open up to someone and then have them kind of shut it down or doubt you or just create any uncertainty or make you feel uncomfortable. That's just, I feel for you. I really do.
Yeah. There's kind of a baseline that we need because sexual assault is such a prevalent human experience, especially for women and femmes. If we're going to address this as a society, it does kind of ask us at a certain point, like, okay, so we need like a certain baseline of trauma and informed, mm-hmm. you know, kind of stuff kind of going on in here in order just to have interpersonal relationships, because you never know when someone's going to disclose in your life.
Correct.
From any direction. It could happen at any time. And if you don't, if you're not informed, if you don't know, there are like right things to say and wrong things to say. Even if you don't know the right things to say, it's really important to at least know the wrong things to say, so you just don't say them.
Correct.
And it would be so helpful if we just got that information out and just everybody knew. I love the start by believing. It's really just wonderful place to start. You're absolutely correct. And I love hearing about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love it. And it is very important because even looking back, if you notice with my story, even the questions, I knew all of the negative things that people said to me. I remember those very vividly, or like the negative reactions or the negative moments in my trauma. But I very vaguely remember the positive moments. You remember all of the bad things that people say, but you don't remember the good things. It's kind of like compliments. You remember all of the bad things that bullies have said to you, or all the negative things that people have said, even though it may have been once or twice, but you forget the 50 or 100 times people said you were amazing, or people said you look fabulous, or just all of those things. But you really focus mm-hmm. on those two times that people said something negative to you.
Yeah.
And I hate that. Mm-hmm. I hate that. So that's why those initial reactions and those initial responses, they are very key into someone's journey to healing.
You mentioned the platform and pageantry, and I was curious if just how receptive the pageant is to having these kinds of conversations. Is there openness about discussing these issues?
I will say 100%. And I think that's one thing about the pageant community is everybody has a cause that they're so passionate about. And since the world of pageantry is kind of built on helping others in the community, we're all very receptive to the platforms that we want to speak on. Mm-hmm. And so everyone has been very open. And I think having a title helps, where it's kind of gotten me into more doors to have the conversation, mm-hmm. which is another big key for pageantry, because I think so often people think you're doing it to look great on stage, or you're doing it to wear an evening gown or to take pictures. And it's like, yes, that is a very cool part of it. But the main part is to be able to say, hi, I'm Miss Wisconsin, but I have this cause. Is there any way that I can speak to the governor on what we're doing to actually help sexual assault victims? And they're very receptive to Miss Wisconsin USA calling than they probably are to Hollis Brown calling. So that has been a pretty cool moment of being able to have conversations. And one thing that is a really big goal of mine is even with Start By Believing, they have it where cities and states can be proclaimed a Start By Believing state. And figuring out what exactly does that mean? How exactly is that progressing this conversation? And so I am very fortunate to actually be talking to some state officials to figure out how can we have Wisconsin recognized as a Start By Believing state, but not only recognized, but seeing what exactly does that mean? Because something about me is I'm not doing it for the pretty picture. I don't want you to just sign a paper and it's like, woo, Wisconsin, Start By Believing. Yay.
We did it.
No, right. This is not you get problem a golden solved sticker. We're clapping applause. No. What is the action? What exactly does that mean? And it also challenges me because, of course, if I'm presenting this idea, people are like, yes, what does that mean? And I'm always just like, good question. Let me think on it. But I will get back to you. And so that's kind of the process where we're at now, where I'm like, good question. What does that look like for Wisconsin to be a Start By Believing state? And so I think pageantry is a very, very powerful tool, if you know how to use it, to really have these conversations and get it in front of the people that are making the decisions to really implement change.
I wanted to ask, what have you struggled the most with in your healing?
That's a good question. Okay. About to get real deep. So a few things that I've struggled the most with in my journey to healing was one, telling my dad. I mentioned earlier that I told my mom back in, 2017? But I actually did not tell my dad until this year. Wow. In 2022. And I actually did not verbally tell him. I did an Instagram live with In Violence Against Women to talk through the platform, my journey and everything. And that is how he learned about my past traumatic experience. Yep. And I was very kind of strategic where I sent it to him, because I think with dads, like, and I am the only child of my dad. And so I'm very much a daddy's little girl, daddy's girl. And I just did not have it in my heart to tell him throughout all of these years. And so he watched the video and he instantly messaged me and was like, oh my goodness, I had no idea that you were going through this. You are absolutely amazing. And I will always believe you. Ooh, girl, you're going to make me cry.
Sorry, I did the face thing.
Oh, goodness. It's okay. But yeah, even seeing that, I started getting emotional because I was just like, wow. Because I mentioned before how I hate keeping secrets and they always feel like a burden. And so I think for me in this journey, that was kind of like the last step or like the last burden that I had. Yeah. Because everybody known, I've talked about it. Obviously, I'm very vocal just with my platform and the pageant and just all of my advocacy in general. But not being able to like have that conversation with my dad.
Yeah.
Just always felt like I had a very big secret that I was keeping from him. And now it's all out on the table. And so that's pretty cool. So there's that. But then also, I think being open and having the conversations with my boyfriend. So that was, I'm not going to say it was difficult in the beginning, but it definitely gave me a new perspective on having maybe tough conversations on how someone likes to be loved or how they need to be loved moving forward after something happens to them. because as I'm sure you can imagine, a lot changed for me after that experience of just like things that I would accept, things that I need, support that I need, and just overall in general. So he's been the absolute best in having those conversations, and not even just having them once, because obviously, and that's something, another thing that I kind of struggled with is understanding that it's not just like, oh, it happened, it's behind me, but knowing that it's kind of like a lifelong journey has been very heavy, because I thought it was just like, okay, it's been 5 months, girl, you can stop crying about it now. But that is just not the case. So realizing that it is literally a lifelong journey to healing, but being open to have those conversations with the people that I need to have those conversations with.
Yeah. What has helped you the most, and where have you found strength?
What has actually helped me the most is talking through it, which before, as I mentioned, I like to keep it all in. And again, push it to the back of my mind. And that actually leads me to another story, is I think once I graduated, I was talking to my best friend, lifelong best friend. Like, she's been my girl since middle school. So we've been friends almost 15 years now. But I don't even know how it came up in conversation. But it turned out that while she was in school, she had been raped as well. And that just blew our minds. Because the whole time we were dealing with this alone, when we could have been helping and supporting each other, especially considering that we'd gone through very similar experiences. And if there's anyone that can understand what you're feeling and what you're going through, it's someone else that has been sexually assaulted. Because it's kind of like a very heavy tie and connection that we all have, where it's like, it may not have happened exactly how it happened to you, but I understand the feelings that you went through. I understand the process and the emotional turmoil and just the happy moments. But then you can maybe see a flower and it reminds you of a flower on that day. You know, we just have that understanding.
Yeah.
But it was just knowing that we both went through something so similar. And we could have just been there for each other, but we were also just so embarrassed to just bring it up. And that should not be the case. And I think that's something, especially with sexual assault survivors, you're embarrassed, or, and not all, I can only speak for myself, but you just always see yourself as like, that would never happen to me. I can never imagine myself in that situation, or just like, I don't know, the stereotypical things people say where it's like, if it happens, I just fade them off. It's like, yeah, okay. Again, you say that, but you've never actually been in a situation.
Yeah.
So just knowing that we were just kind of like struggling and hurting separately, when we could have been supporting each other together.
And do you have those talks now? Like, have you become supports for each other?
We actually have not talked about it recently, but I would say, if anything, I have found that support and again, helping others. So let's say, which this is actually an example where one of my friends, a family member of hers, was sexually assaulted. Mm-hmm. And she noticed that they started acting out, or they just started seeming not like themselves. And I was just like, yep, that sounds about right. And she was like, well, what do you mean? It's like, well, is all the things that I went through myself. So I completely understand the process that she's kind of going through. And it's very hard to watch. I can't even imagine being on the other end. Again, you want to protect your loved one. You want to support them. But it's just something that they have to work through. And you can be a support system for them. But again, it is something that they have to work through in their own way. And they may not know what they need from you in that moment or how you can help them, but just being there and letting them know that you are there, that helps a lot.
So I wanted to ask about your podcast.
So I started a podcast called Outnumbered, and I'm absolutely obsessed with it because I'm all about women empowerment and setting up the boss babe situation. So that is what Outnumbered is about. I actually, a few years ago, used to work for ESPN, and they would have TVs up all over the office. And one day I just looked at the televisions, and I always saw men. And looking around the office, I always saw men. And I looked at my coworker and I said, Kelly, I'm fed up. We need more women, whether it's in the office, on a TV, I don't care where it is, but we just need more. And hence Outnumbered was born, because we were outnumbered. And that is very much kind of the feel in sports. Although I will say there has been a very nice uptake in like woman empowerment groups and support situations, whether it's social media or outings, whatever it is, for women in sports, which has been really cool to kind of see. But always remember, we were the first. Aside from Wise, they were the first. But I will say we were the first podcast. But we always like to say we're making a mistake, so you don't have to. So if we did something in our career journey that worked, please apply it to yours. And I wish you the best in getting your dream job. But if we did something in our journey that did not work, please do not apply that to your career. And I hope you get to your dream job faster, because you can learn from my mistakes. And so throughout the episodes, we just kind of share personal stories, lessons, thoughts, theories, everything that we've learned throughout the years. But then we also bring in other amazing women that are able to kind of share their stories, but then also share positions that people don't really think about. Because I think when you're in college, you have your business majors, your communications majors, and then probably sports science, but that's all they really talk about. You don't talk about how you can be a writer for a TV series, or that there's a major in that. You don't talk about how television stations need commercial traffic control and how that's a whole position, you know? So having those conversations so that people really understand all of their options, and maybe you don't see that class or a good fit at your university, but there is actually a job that fits your personality traits and what you're good at perfectly. So it's like, what path did this person take to get where they are now? And how can maybe you either apply it if that seems like it aligns with the journey that you want to take, or maybe tweak it so that way you can get there or to get somewhere else? So really just kind of leveraging the job pool and, you know, getting more women up in the front office, because we need them.
I loved, I've also had some experience in a male dominated industry. And I loved listening to some of the episodes. Even though I'm not in the sports industry, it was still very much relatable. And yeah. I loved the interview episodes that you did. I listened to those and I really loved them. And they were very much applicable to people in other industries as well. So just letting my listeners know, just go check it out. Go check it out.
I appreciate that. And you know, it really is. Like right now, we're actually going through rebranding. So it may still be called Outnumbered. It may not. I don't know. We'll see how I feel. But it is very applicable to anyone that's either in a male-dominated industry, or even if you're just looking for a job. Because honestly, we're sharing resume and career tips. Some things are probably a little more specific to women, but overall, our goal is to help you get a job. Because realistically, I didn't get my first full-time big girl paying job, especially in sports, because I think that as another level, since it is very difficult to get a job in sports, but I did not get my first big girl job until last year after the pandemic, before I was doing either freelance or contract or just fitting in where I could get in. And so I really want to make that process more seamless for other people.
And is that what you're currently doing? Are you still in that position?
Actually, I am still with the same company, the Milwaukee Bucks, but I got a promotion.
Congratulations.
And so when I started, thank you. So when I started, I was actually in a sales role, but now I work more in the corporate partnership side. So more in partner strategy and management, which was ultimately my dream job and my end goal. And I actually talk about this in one of the episodes where when I was interviewing for the sales position, I was very transparent. And I don't recommend this for everyone. This takes the right employer for you to do this. But I was very transparent and was like, yes, I am open to this opportunity, but I want you to know that my end goal is corporate partnerships. So I'd love it if I can, because they honestly have very much transferable skills. So it's like, if I can work on accounts that will help prepare me for corporate partnerships, that's what I would like to do. And they were surprisingly very receptive of that.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Oh, like you said, it probably doesn't translate to every interview or every situation, but like, I could think that, yeah, that could be a great thing to show, like, that you're hungry, that you're motivated, that you have goals.
Correct. I do not advise everybody to go in an interview and tell them that you actually want a different job.
Well said.
Sometimes it works, but maybe not.
Depends.
Yeah, feel it out first.
Do you ever have people make assumptions about you because you're into pageantry, like because you've been doing that work? Do people ever make assumptions about you because you're Miss Wisconsin? And how do you deal with that? What kind of assumptions do they make?
Ooh, I'm not sure exactly what assumptions they make, but I know they're there based on just conversations with people. And I think one of the biggest, well, I'm going to say two of the biggest assumptions that I think I get, because one is related to pageants, but then one is also related to my job. So I'll start with the job, because that one's pretty quickly. I can wrap that one up pretty quickly. But for that one, people always assume that I either know a lot about sports or I'm there to like date an athlete. It's the weirdest thing, which I am. Yeah, I have gotten that before. Fortunately, I have not gotten that recently within the last 2 years. But when I was first starting off, I did get that. And that was actually very annoying.
Yeah,
because that is not why I'm here at all. I could care less. But I get that. Or people think I am like a sports fanatic when I actually have no idea what's going on during the game. I have a passion for sports business, not necessarily sports. Although I have learned a lot. I have learned a lot about the game of basketball. Can I quote you stats from last year? No, I cannot. Can I tell you who won the NBA championship? I can say last year because it was the Bucks. But the year before then, no, I cannot. I cannot. So that tells you my level of sports knowledge. But again, I'm learning. And then the other assumption, I think, with pageantry is just what I mentioned earlier, is how we're very superficial, or we're there to take pictures or just be pretty. And that is not the case for me. I have dedicated my year to very much being community focused. And even if you go on the Instagram that I have from Miss Wisconsin USA, you notice majority of the pictures are me actually out in the community. And there's very few headshots or like model-y pictures, just because I really want to use this year to be out in the community and make sure people see me and activate. I even got one time where I forget what the event it was. It was either a walk or some kind of fundraiser. I forget off the top of my head, but they were like, when you come, do you want to actually participate or do you want to just like stand and take pictures? And I was just like, why would I want to stand? And I was like, no, I have on my sneakers. Like, I'm coming to play. Even this past weekend, I did an event with Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and it was a whole basketball game. And at first I had on my crown and they were like, oh, are you coming to play? And I was like, yeah, I have on my sneakers. I can take this crown off. I'm here to get down and dirty. I'm not here to just stand here and look cute. Like, that's no. Awesome. Right. So I think those are probably the biggest assumptions that I get. And when really, no, I'm using this platform to activate all the things that I want to do And even one of my coworkers, he said, when you go to Miss USA, you're absolutely going to win. And I always remind them, I was like, yes, if that's what God has in the plan for me. He was like, no, you got to speak it into existence. And I was like, yeah, I am. Obviously, everyone that goes wants to win. But if that's what God has aligned for me, then it will happen. If it's not what he has aligned for me, then unfortunately it won't. But either way, I'm going to be successful and that things are going to happen whether I have this title or not. Like, it's great that I'm Miss Wisconsin USA and hopefully the next Miss USA. But either way, I'm still going to be out here talking about sexual assault awareness. I'm still going to be out here doing my podcast, advocating for women in male-dominated industries. So it's like, either way, I'm still going to be talking and doing these things. Hopefully, again, I can do them as Miss USA, but the things are going to get done regardless. So I'm just grateful for this platform.
There's going to be a lot of little girls watching Miss USA. And I wanted to know if there were one message that you hope that they receive watching, what would that be?
I would want them to know that one, you can do anything that you set your mind to and you work hard for it. I think sometimes people think things fall into your lap, which luck does play a part into it because you can be the best in the world, but it just not be in your cards. But if you work and prepare for a situation, you're ready for anything that comes. And I think that's ultimately what pageantry teaches you, is how to elevate your best self so that way you're ready for anything that comes your way, whether you get the opportunity or not. Because yes, there's only one Miss USA, but there's a million other opportunities in this world that are still going to get you to your end goal. So make sure that you're always elevating. Make sure that you're always presenting your best self, but also make sure you're having fun and enjoying the moment. You worked hard, so like, enjoy the time. I think sometimes we get so stuck in social media and looking perfect and posting and doing all these things, but it's like, it's okay to put the phone down and just really enjoy the fruits of your labor.
I love that you said that. I had been focusing so much and thinking about the upcoming pageant as this big, stressful, like hardworking event. And so like, yeah, that makes me think I should also say not just good luck, but also I hope you have fun.
Yes, thank you.
That it is like an exciting event that's coming up for you. So yeah.
Thank you.
I love that you just reframed that for me.
Oh, yes. At first I was stressed, I'm not going to lie. But with me adapting, like enjoying this moment, because God already has everything lined up. I'm very religious. So it's like God already has it all lined out. All you can do is go be you, be your best self. Miss USA happens every year, but you only have this one moment to go. So why would I waste? I'm not going to say waste, but why would I use the whole week focused on me being stressed to be perfect when perfection doesn't exist? When I can really just enjoy the moment that I've worked so hard for.
In the work that you do, I'm very aware that you must do a lot of interviews. And I kind of just wanted to ask, is there a question that, and this doesn't have to be specific to the subject that we're talking about, but in all your interviews that you do, is there ever a question that you're like, wow, I wish they'd ask this?
Ooh, honestly, I'm going to say not in this instance, just because I literally went through my whole life story, basically. And so I feel like I feel like I touched on anything that probably would have been a question, because this has been a great conversation. So I think anything that I hoped you would have asked, we were able to already talk through it.
Is there any special way that you're taking care of yourself before the pageant? Any self-care that you're focused on, like really specifically at this time?
Yeah. So for me, I've really tried to focus on unplugging. And that means truly unplugging, because I have my 9 to 5, my work time. But then I also have my, what is it they say? Your 5 to 10, which is like your passion projects and everything else. And so that was the pageant, outnumbered, all of the things that I wanted to do. And I think for me, just being a little more intentional of carving out that time where it's like, okay, shut off your computer now and go to bed or have that time to relax. I started a new morning routine, which has been amazing. I'm only like a week in, but so far that's been the best week I've had in a very long time, where now I wake up at 5 a.m. I take my dog for a walk. I go for a run. I do my actual workout. I come back, eat breakfast, watch the Today Show, and then I go to work, which is also funny because I was not a morning person before. And so it's like now I've already been up and had a whole morning before people have even woken up and showered. So it's been pretty nice so far.
Wow. Congratulations. That's a big shift, especially if you're not naturally a morning person. So
yeah.
All the respect.
Thank you. Before I would do like a workout at 6, or I'd like wake up and go straight to the workout, which I still work out around that time. Which workout I do, that fluctuates. But having that extra hour before, I think that's been a game changer for me.
It also just really helps during the summer too. I start waking up and having earlier mornings in the summer, because if you have a dog to walk with the heat, oh my goodness.
That's a good point.
Just a really beautiful, special time of day. I've always loved, like, I'm not a morning person either, but if the stars align and I happen to be there when the sun is starting to come up, like, I love blue o'clock when I call it blue o'clock when the sun is like not there yet, but the sky lights up and that very specific color of blue, and like seeing it come through the trees. Like, I'm on East Coast as well, so I've got like forests around me, and that's my favorite thing. And it's just such
exactly what you're talking about.
Peaceful, like beautiful, and yeah, and deeply like spiritual time of day for me. So it's you feel like you're alone with the world, and it makes you very, very present. It's hard not to be present.
Yep.
It sort of calls that out of you. It's beautiful. Yeah.
I agree. It really sets the tone for the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And my final question is, do you have anything that you'd like to say to the survivors who are listening?
Ooh. Yes. I would like to say, keep going. Keep going, because you are going to have good moments. You're going to have bad moments. You're going to have great moments. You're going to have hard moments. But then you're going to have amazing moments that just kind of trump everything. And it makes it all worth it. And I would also say, work on your own pace. Don't let anyone try to rush you into therapy, into resources, into whatever it may be. If right now you just feel at peace coloring, I'm going to need you to just keep coloring. If you feel at peace watching Netflix, keep on watching Netflix. Do things on your own pace, but also acknowledge that it's okay to seek help and to have that extra voice. Because I was not ready, but it probably could have helped a lot in the early stages of my journey. But just know that it's okay. And is there a saying now that I'm sure you've heard of it because it's everywhere, but it's okay to not be okay. And please know that this path is not linear. And so one way may not be the end all be all. It may be good for a month and you may have to switch it up. But continue working on yourself, because everything will get better and you will be in a great space.
Beautifully said. Thank you.
Of course.
That was all the things. And oh my God, I loved when you were like, I'm going to need you to keep coloring. That was so great.
Sometimes we just got to color. Yeah. I feel like as an adult, the things that make me feel better or bring me peace are all the things I like to do when I was 5.
There's so much healing present in some of the just the simple joys that you pulled yourself away from because you thought mm-hmm. you had to in order to be an adult. And it's like, oh, this was actually all right. I need this back.
Correct. Adults color. We watch High School Musical. We eat Lunchables. Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. We call it balance.
It's important.
Mm-hmm. Always. Mm.
What did you let go of that you should bring back?
You know, I think I'm going to start taking dance classes again.
Nice.
It's been a while, but I did it for 18 years. Yeah, I did take ballet and tap and all of that. But I think I'm going to look back into it after Miss USA, once my schedule kind of like calms down a little bit.
I can't imagine how much you must be doing. Like you just talking about your schedule, I was like, wow. Yeah. When I was looking and scheduling with you, I had that suspicion. I was like, I feel like she's working a 9-to-5 and then doing a podcast and also doing Miss USA. That's the vibe I'm getting. And I cannot imagine. So all the respect.
We do all the
truly.
Things.
Yeah. All the things. None of them small.
I know. I'm very much a go big or go home person. And even when I try to do something small, like I can say, oh, I think I'm going to color. And then maybe by the end of the week, I'm like, I think I want to make a coloring book and publish it. So it just always elevates.
That's what I do too.
I can never do something simple.
The world needs like go big or go home people. So thank you for being one of those glorious people.
Of course. If someone's here to fill the void, I'm your girl.
Thank you so much for coming, for sharing so much of your story and so much of yourself. And thank you so much for talking about the work that you're doing in the world with the advocacy program that you're working with.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been amazing to share my story, speaking with you today. And hopefully, if I just helped one person, that's all I can ask for. So thank you for allowing me to share my story on your platform.
It's an honor. And I know that you have helped more than one person. So thank you. Yeah.
Good.
Thank you so much for listening. Please check episode notes. There you will find links to learn more about Hollis and the work that she's doing. You can follow her on social media, check out her website and her podcast, Outnumbered. Hollis will be competing in the Miss USA pageant on October 3rd, and you can not only tune in to watch, but you can support her by voting for her in the viewer's choice section of the website linked below. It costs about $2 to vote, but it's a great way to support Hollis and show her some love. The Season 4 Letters for the Fire Project is receiving submissions till the end of the year. Listeners are welcome to write a letter to their rapist or abuser, and I will read it during a special episode at the end of Season 4. If you'd like to learn more, you can listen to Season 3's Letters for the Fire episode and read the blog entry on the website to learn more about how to submit your letter and participate in the project. A huge shout out to my Patreon members who make this whole shebang-a-ringer possible. Sadanka, Emerald, Kathleen, Betty, Sharanya, and a special shout out and thank you to my newest member, Ashley. Thank you so much for joining and for your beautiful message. It meant so much to me and seriously made my day. Thank you all so much. You all keep me and the podcast going. I am currently fundraising to afford a Descript subscription in order to make Finding OK more accessible to the deaf, hearing impaired, and neurodivergent communities by providing transcripts for episodes. This is the next big step for Finding OK, and it will help me reach more survivors who are seeking support. Any and all help is appreciated. Come find me on Twitch for live streams and podcast Q&A sessions where you can ask me anything. Become a Patreon member at various tiers to support the podcast and to gain access to bonus picks, audio, sneak peeks, and occasional early access and video episodes. The video of this episode with Hollis will be available to Tier 3 members. The podcast is now heading into a mid-season break that just happens to be left of the middle. There will be a few weeks in September and October without new episodes. This will give me time to work on the episodes I plan to publish in October. Patreon members will continue getting updates and bonus material during the break, so it's a great time to join. You can also stay updated by following me on Instagram and social media. Please visit the podcast website, www.finding-ok.com. It's where you can find all the links to my social media. It's where you can learn more about me and all my guests. It's where you can read reviews, leave reviews, contact me. It's also where you can find links to donate. Finding OK is crowdfunded. It is listener support that is keeping the podcast alive. If only a handful of the people who listened to each episode donated $1 or $2, the podcast would be fully funded. If you can't afford to donate or become a member on Patreon, one of the best ways that you can support the show is by reviewing and sharing online or by word of mouth. Thank you again for listening. This has been Finding OK. Black Lives Matter. Take care of yourself.
Your heart is a muscle, the size of your fist. Keep on loving, keep on fighting, and hold on, and hold on. Hold on for your life. Your heart is a muscle, the size of your fist. Keep on loving.